Europe's chemical sector is rather like a ship at sea in a storm, with winds blowing, not just from one direction, but from many. Steering this vessel requires great skill in these difficult times. And in these circumstances, last week's European Petrochemical Association annual meeting took place. It was an unusual one, with coronavirus making a physical meeting impossible. There were instead three afternoons of web-based presentations and debate. There were many thought-provoking moments, with the organisers creating a programme which faced up to the industry's challenges and how to steer the ship towards future prosperity. There were some memorable moments, and one quote particularly stuck in my memory from the Dow CEO, Jim Fitterling. He said, "Leaders are stepping up and saying, in the face of all this coming at us in an unusual year, we are not going to sit back and take it. We're going to stand up and take action and change things. And that is the only way things are going to get better." I'm Will Beecham, ICIS Chemical Business Deputy Editor. And I'm joined today by our special guest, Caroline Siu-Siu, who's CEO of EPCA, and by our regular guests, John Richardson, who's our senior consultant in Asia, Paul Hodges, who's chairman of New Normal Consulting and author of the PH Report, and by Nigel Davis, our Insight editor. Well, Caroline, it's fantastic to have you with us today. I wonder if you could just tell me what you think the main takeaways are from the event. What were the most important themes to emerge?
Well, thank you very much, Will, for inviting me today. So, yes, indeed, we organized last week our first virtual annual meeting with an ambitious objective, which was to explore and analyze the world beyond the new normal and the contribution of the petrochemical industry to a smarter, circular and more inclusive economic reemergence. One of my main takeaways from this year's annual meeting is the coherence in the analysis and the perspective beyond the new normal, which really emerged from our speakers, particularly the CEOs and the C-suite executives who join us on day one and day two. All concurred in recognizing that the COVID-19 pandemic has accelerated and intensified key trends that existed before in green transformation, global trade confrontation, and tech innovation. And the good thing is that the industry reacted well to the crisis, and pivoting continues. The demand for greater sustainability toward a more circular and low carbon economy is really higher than ever on the agenda of both manufacturers and supply chain providers in the petrochemical industry. Sustainability was clearly identified as a systemic shift and an opportunity for us all. And the conviction that the petrochemical industry has a critical role to play in this green transformation was strongly and clearly expressed by our leaders last Monday. You've mentioned Jim Fitterling just a few minutes ago, but Martin Brudermüller, the chairman of the board and CTO of BASF, clearly said that taking an active stance in the coming transformation process is the only viable option to be part of the solution. And Jim continued saying that the European petrochemical industry is already highly attuned to sustainability issues. Bernard Pinatel also mentioned the fact that the crucial question for us is how can we combine growth and recovery with decarbonization of the chemical sector, and that was for him the real question. So sustainability is clearly and more than ever part of the strategy of the manufacturers and the logistics service providers in the petrochemical industry. I do believe that society and politics should also have interest in our economically successful business transformation. Martin Brudermüller mentioned this, that if the transformation earns money, it's a no-brainer and everybody will follow. So this was for me a clear call for honest discussion and collaboration with the sector across the value chain, with investors and regulators. The second most important theme, I believe, was diversification, was greater resilience. This was mentioned on day one and on day two, diversification of supply chains in particular. And as illustrated by the CEOs, on day one and day two, companies really relied on their global presence and network of supply chains to address COVID-19 as the pandemic spread west from China and the rest of Asia to Europe and the Americas. Another theme, which was not really new, but was still acknowledged as a great crisis management enabler, is certainly digitization. You remember that digitization has been part of the discussion at EPC annual meeting since 2017. This year, all recognize that without the digitized IT systems, the response to the COVID-19 crisis would not have been as fast and efficient as it was. Another important theme is certainly the resilience of the people and the strengths of the teams, either working remotely or in the field or on the shore. And I was pleased that their contribution was actually acknowledged and praised. Discussions last week highlighted that a lot still needs to be done in order to acquire and nurture the talents, increase diversity and inclusion, and develop the creativity and responsiveness needed to help our industry on its transformational journey. We will make sure that we will continue diversifying the profile of our speakers so that they can bring, again, a multifaceted approach to the challenges ahead of us.
Well, thanks. I think you summed that up really well. How about next year? What have you learned from this year to help you plan for next year?
We can really say that we found a format which is well suited to our audience. As we communicated, our virtual event has attracted our community's interest with more than 1,000 registered delegates from 40 countries. And despite what some called the Zoom fatigue, there was a strong eagerness from all these people to reconnect. And we all felt part of the community again over 3 days. I'd like to highlight as well that, again, this format is really, really well suited to our audience. We double the audience that we usually get, during the physical meetings, with close to 700 participants attending the C-Suite Leadership Forum on day one. So, again, we never reach such high figures. With our videos on demand, we have also already doubled these numbers less than 1 week after the event. So we will certainly continue to use this format. If we are reloaded, we will certainly also, combine physical meetings with virtual meetings and to come up with hybrid programs.
So, I mean, were there any drawbacks from that, having that virtual format compared to the usual physical meeting?
Well, I mean, one of the drawbacks is that people probably were not able to reconnect physically and to nurture the way they usually do so their social bonds and interactions. Maybe we could improve the connectivity or the connectivity on the platform, and I think that this is probably something that we all need to learn more. Next year we will probably show the questions that the audience asked, because this is something that some thought that was missing. We will probably also develop even more interactive sessions in the future. Digital events also allowed us to reach an untapped audience. from departments within the member companies, which usually do not get invited, do not get the chance to attend in person or physical annual meetings. We also heard that some of our member companies broadcasted the digital sessions and especially the C-suite leadership forum. And that's another great thing on which we should build, you know.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, certainly from my experience within ICIS, a lot more of us were able to access those events than usually. But one of those themes that you picked up on was the sustainability agenda. I just wonder if you've got anything to say on how the industry can act swiftly enough on the sustainability agenda. You know, we've got these targets coming up, sustainability targets, recycling targets in the next few years. What does the industry need to do next to really move up a gear?
Well, I mean, the listening to our speakers last week, I think that there was a clear call, you know, to embed sustainability in the strategy. For those who had or would not have done so yet, there were also four main areas which have been identified during the virtual annual meeting of last week, and on which the industry is accelerating and will continue to accelerate, which is the low carbon technology innovation for further carbon reduction. This was highlighted several times during day one. When it's not possible to actually switch to lower carbon sources, industry will continue to develop carbon management strategies, such as the carbon capture and storage technologies, including the development of offshore storage initiatives. What struck me was also the importance of increasing the transparency on CO emissions along the value chain. That was mentioned several times, in the need to really share data collected thanks to all these IT technologies, to share data with customers, with suppliers, and so on and so forth. Again, to have a better understanding and view of CO2 emissions along the value chain. And last but not least, chemical recycling. You know, every month brings news about new developments, the creation of pilot projects on chemical recycling. Thomas Caspary of Shell actually highlighted that at the moment, only 15% of the waste collected in the EU ends up coming back in the plastic market. And he really invited the regulators to recognize and incentivize advanced chemical recycling in the same way as traditional recycling. In addition, I do believe that this year we heard probably more strongly than ever a call for collaboration, a greater collaboration again with customers and the other stakeholders along the value chain.
Thank you, Caroline. So let's bring in the other panelists now. Paul, do you agree with that analysis? Caroline mentioned carbon capture and storage, increasing transparency on CO2 emissions, and boosting chemical recycling. Are they the key priorities that you think the industry should focus on?
Yes, I thought it was an excellent summary. I loved the title as well. I thought Beyond the New Normal really set us up for a discussion about, to an extent, moving into the unknown, that we've been in business as usual for 20 or 30 years now. And you know, everything, good or bad, comes to an end. And we're now moving into this new world. And I was struck by Mark Schuller's comment in ICB this week, where he referred to the paradigm shift that took place in the 1960s, where far-sighted leaders of the industry decided that there was no point in staying with coal as a major feedstock anymore, and we needed to move over to this new opportunity with oil and gas. And you know, that set the basis for really major development and the whole industry that we now have, in which Europe has remained a world leader, which wouldn't have been necessarily thought through in the 1960s. So I think change, while uncomfortable, is also incredibly important. And I do think that if we look forward, I can say this because I'm an advisor to the industry, I'm pretty sure that the future of our industry is no longer in oil and gas. The future of our industry is now in recycled material, and that the companies who move into that area now, and of course it will be difficult, of course there will be mistakes made, but the companies who move into that area will be the winners in the future. Sustainability is making this major change in the world, and that is where I think we're going to make our profit, because I'm interested as a businessman always in, can we do something that actually generates revenue and profit and therefore employment and so on? And this, to me, is a great opportunity.
John, you've got quite a global perspective, being based over in Perth in Australia. How would you rate the Europe's progress on chemical recycling, which seems to be one of the most important opportunities for the industry?
I think it's a global leader, Will. I think it's through the EU Green Deal and the investments that were taking place before the Green Deal was announced, all the initiatives. I think the European chemical industry is leading the world. Having said that, watch out for the fifth plenum, which sounds very boring, but it's actually very important, which is China's next big political meeting between the 26th and 29th of October, when the next five-year plan will be announced. And these five-year plans are so important for China's development. I would not be surprised if literally billions of dollars are allocated to developing recycling in China. I would not be surprised at all, because it fits in with the desire to move up the manufacturing value chain, to clean up the environment. It fits in with their broader environmental agenda as they try to gain geopolitical influence. So at the moment, I think Europe has an edge, but watch China.
Nigel, one of the other things that Caroline mentioned there was the need for transparency on CO2 emissions and the sharing of data. Do you think that's something that could really help the industry as it pursues the sustainability agenda?
Well, I think what the industry needs, I think, as Martin Brudermüller has said, was they need a plan. They need to understand how costs will ramp up over the next few years. Not just the next few years, I'm talking about, he was talking about 10 or 20 years. So, what does a low carbon future mean for such an energy intensive industry? And how can companies plan? They have to be able to plan, to be able to decide where to put their assets, clearly. But, it's a big world. So you may put your assets somewhere else where you're not hit by the burdens of the cost of carbon, as you may be in Europe. So we need to understand that Green Deal and what that really means. And that came out quite strongly. But I'm fascinated by the way that, we're looking at a much more diverse sort of feedstock environment going forward. And Paul mentioned it clearly that, more and more European companies are looking at alternative sources of feedstocks. They will have to, as they align themselves more with what end-use customers really want. So that's going to be important. We still don't understand what chemical recycling really means. The Commission doesn't really, as far as I'm aware, accept chemical recycling as recycling. So there are battles to be fought along the way, but it's that circularity. Smarter circularity, as Carolina mentioned, that's going to be so important going forward.
Thank you. One of the other big issues, of course, facing the industry everywhere, really, is the changes to the energy mix. With the we may have reached peak oil already, and there have been announcements, a swathe of announcements in the last few weeks about oil refiners shutting down capacity, rationalising their assets, and that probably means in the longer run that there may well be less oil refineries in Europe. But those oil refineries are currently attached to crackers which take naphtha from them. So Nigel, how do you think the industry needs to adapt to this changing energy mix in the future?
Well, that plays directly into, you know, as I was mentioning just now, this idea that there will be alternative sources of feedstock. You know, where will you get your feedstock over the longer term? That's got to be worked out, and we don't really understand that yet, because recycling, even mechanical recycling, is not exactly well supplied at the moment. So, you know, this is a huge problem for certain companies, particularly those that are linked closely to refineries that you know, may have seen better days. So there's a lot of disruption, I think, to come, particularly driven, as you say, by that you know, shift away from the industry, or not so much the industry, the shift in the energy mix that will determine which oil refineries in Europe and across the world survive and which ones change. There's a massive difference between the way the international oil companies view the future and the national oil companies view the future. So, you know, that's another topic which we can keep for another day.
Paul, John, do you want to add anything to that discussion on the energy mix?
Yes, I mean, I think the latest news is really confirming the discussions we've had about the idea of an S-curve, where things move very slowly at first and incumbents go, told you so, what a load of rubbish that is. And then one morning they wake up and, you know, something has really changed in the environment, but they have to scramble to try and catch up. And I was thinking of that this morning when I saw that electric vehicles and hybrids are going to be 10% of sales this year in Europe, 10%. And they're forecast to be at least 15% next year. So in other words, we haven't sort of fallen back because of COVID, and are now, you know, so we're going to continue with diesel and gasoline. Drivers, buyers are saying, no, we want to keep clear skies, we want the better air quality. And of course, the thing is that electric vehicles, now they've got to this stage, are better and cheaper. There's far less to go wrong, and, you know, with subsidies and so on, at the moment they're very much cheaper, but as the unit costs come down, so they will continue to be much cheaper. So there really isn't much choice. I mean, Shell, of course, announced this last week as well. They used to have, I mean, 15 years ago, which isn't very long away, they had 55 refineries, and they've now announced the closure of a further 7, and they'll be left with 10. Now, that says to me, and I grew up in the petrochemical industry. You know, I grew up in Teesside, I grew up in Houston. You know, that's where I worked. I worked globally with oil and gas. If Shell are only going to have 10 refineries, there's not going to be a lot of naphtha around. And I know that some of the oil companies are dreaming, oh yes, people won't buy gasoline, but they will buy. No, they won't. I mean, you know, if they got in touch with the end user and they looked at what's happening with electric vehicles, this is all part of the same thing, that we're moving, as Caroline said so excellently, you know, we're moving into the world of sustainability, and that changes the rules. And it's a fantastic opportunity. You know, I mean, obviously some companies are going to be left behind. I'm sorry about that, but their better people will leave, and their better people will go and join the companies who are moving forward. So this is creative destruction as we know it. It's all going to happen in the next 2 to 3 years, I think, major change now. And I'm very delighted that John from outside was saying, you know, Europe is in pole position here. We've got it to lose. So we've really got to keep up the pace now.
Yeah, Paul, you've just written an article for ICIS Chemical Business, where you're talking about the sector in Europe entering a new landscape where coronavirus has accelerated paradigm shifts. How has the virus accelerated paradigm shifts?
Well, it's really got us to one of these moments where time suddenly seems to move much faster, and you can see it in everywhere. If you go back to March, when the lockdown started, a lot of people said, oh well, that will be the end of all this sustainability nonsense, now we're going to go back and, you know, economics will triumph. And here we are 6 months later, and it's absolutely clear those people were completely and utterly wrong. It's really focused people on the world is much more fragile than we had realised, and we have to be much more careful about the world. And I mean, EPCA last year, I remember Mark Schuller in his presidential comments talking about, you know, we are falling behind the needs of young people. And he issued a, you know, a famous call to action, which I'm delighted that the industry responded to. That was real leadership by Mark. And the issue here is that if you look at demand patterns, if you look at the circular economy, if you look at reshoring, you look at advanced manufacturing, there are just such an enormous range of opportunities. And they are, the great thing about them is they've all got major profit potential. So this is not about being doing good or anything else. This is about running a business for success over the next 20 to 30 years. As I said before, it's similar to the process we went through, you know, before our time in the 60s, where leadership said, look, forget coal. Coal is the past. Let's move to oil and gas. Now we're going to do the same thing. Oil and gas are the past. Recycled product is the future.
Nigel, you wrote on Friday last week about BASF, which announced that day a huge 2.8 billion euro asset impairment charge for the third quarter. It expects to make a big loss in Q3, and it based its assumptions around GDP of -5%, industrial production of -5%, and chemicals production of -2.5%. So I just wondered, what does this tell us about conditions at the moment for BASF and its peers in Europe?
Well, I think, you know, that was the hit in the third quarter, and, you know, we're likely to see possibly asset impairments and other sort of impairments from other companies when those results are announced coming over the next few weeks. But the important thing there is, well, obviously it was a huge number, and we can see that it was because of the downturn, the coronavirus downturn, the automotive and aviation industries, and how that hit the company. But having said that, the third quarter results, certainly at the earnings before interest and tax, before special items, before those impairments, were better than analysts as they expected. Things were not as bad through the third quarter as a whole as many analysts had thought. Covestro said something very similar on the same day, on Friday. And so therefore, you know, things are looking a little bit better than we thought, certainly a few months ago. We've made some progress. There's been some push or some pullback from those major industries, perhaps not aviation, but certainly from automobiles. Construction is certainly doing a lot better. Of course, BASF has moved out of construction or its construction business. But it did say that in the third quarter, it was above analyst estimates across quite a big part of the company, actually, surface technology, materials, industrial solutions and chemicals. Having said that, you know, the chemicals business is especially under pressure, particularly basic chemicals. And, you know, that's due to weaker demand, and also it'll be offset by cost savings, but it's still a very, very tough time for all companies.
John, you've been writing about Europe as well, from your Australian base, on polyethylene. You've got some figures there on polyethylene in Europe, and the ICIS supply and demand database forecasts suggest a small decrease for 2020, which is much better performance, actually, than the 2008-09 financial crisis. So how do you compare 08-09 with now in terms of PE, John?
Incomparable. I think that the difference this time is the job furlough schemes. Millions, tens of millions of people in jobs. It's really benefited the low paid. And if you look at the evidence from the retail sector, they're spending more than they did during 2008. In 2008, they were cutting back spending, the low paid, because they didn't have this kind of government support. We've had hygiene needs, which has been very strong, which has supported demand and probably will carry on supporting demand. But the industry's been very fortunate, really. The polyethylene industry and the polypropylene industry when it comes to packaging. And of course, the PET industry has benefited. The issue, as I explained in the blog post, is will this carry on? She's mining some incredibly sophisticated scenario planning, type of which you've probably never done before, looking at all the variables. And one of the key variables is the extent and the effectiveness of future government stimulus in supporting low-paid workers. And eventually, a lot of these industries will have to come off life support. And some industries or some service sectors simply won't be viable. We're talking about, you know, long-term big job losses. So really, actually, it does come back to sustainability and how the EU, the Commission, can create new jobs for people in new industries. That's going to be very, very important. Coming back to how that supports petrochemicals demand and even packaging demand. That's the long term. But, you know, short term, there's a risk of this shock. The stimulus is withdrawn next year. The growth may be, you know, a lot worse than we've seen this year. And, you know, you think about the comparison in terms of the economic problems of 2008 with today, they're much worse today, of course. That's the issue. So it's really bottom-up analysis I've been talking about, Will. You've got to really, you know, understand your customers' customers, application, end-use application by end-use application, end-use sector by end-use sector. So what does it mean, the fact that we won't be working as much in offices? That's lost packaging demand versus working more in suburbs. And how does it fluctuate between the two as people temporarily go back to the offices, then return to the suburbs again? You know, it's really complicated. So I think companies cannot really, obviously need to try and save costs, but I think, you know, monitoring demand would be a false economy in terms of cutting costs. I think we spend more on this kind of demand monitoring.
Have you got a figure? Have you done any kind of initial analysis yourself on what the impact could be next year, say, on polyethylene demand in Europe?
Well, I did. I mean, what I did, Will, is I looked at the patterns of growth between 2008 and 2012, those 5 years. And imagine the future, the 2021-2025 period, those 5 years, where those exact patterns of growth, percentage-wise, were repeated. So that includes two big falls of 2008-2009. We saw minus or negative growth. So let's assume that that's repeated, and very low growth in those subsequent years. And for polyethylene, cumulatively, demand across the EU 28 countries will be 9.1 million tons smaller than our base case. Our base case seems a comfortable V-shaped recovery. Carrying on through 2021 to 2025. So if history were to repeat itself, got 9 million tons less demand across the European market. That's not going to happen because history never exactly repeats itself. But at least the exercise gives people pause for thought. And the importance, as I said, of this really close bottom-up demand analysis and how that can inform production and sales decisions. I think that's very, very important.
Well, thank you very much, John, to Carolyn, too, to Nigel and to Paul. And if you'd like to learn more about the products and services that ICIS has to offer, visit icis.com.